It's me again, Harry the Hog Dog. Not really. I just thought I'd give you a little shock there and test to make sure you were wide awake and ready for the exciting story of how I escaped from the depths of Picket Canyon. Because you'd better be ready for this one. See, I got stranded and abandoned on the Hodges place and had to find my way back home. In a snowstorm, mind you. Had to find my way back home in this terrible snowstorm. And in case you haven't been lost and abandoned in Picket Canyon lately, let me tell you that it's a very scary place. Especially when the sun goes down and the coyotes are as thick as hair on a dog. So you'd better get yourself prepared for a double scary story. And maybe you shouldn't listen to it at all unless you're certified tough. Oh, and did I mention the cat? Maybe not. There was this cat named Mary D, and she'd been marooned on the Hodges place for years, staying down there all by herself, you see, and boy, was she weird. She was so weird, she'd turned into a vampire. No kidding. I told you this was going to be a scary story. But I seem to be getting the pony before the horse. Better go back and start at the beginning. Where was I? Oh, yes. It's me again, Hank the Cow Dog. It was sometime in the middle of February, and as you might know, that is a month when we often get snow in the Texas Panhandle. And when I awoke that morning and looked out the window at Slim Shack, that's what I saw. Big snowflakes falling from the sky. Drover and I had spent the night down at Slim's place because, well, it should be obvious. Slim was a soft-hearted cowboy who took pity on poor ranch dogs who had to sleep out in the weather, and he'd invited us to bunk at his camp. He allowed us to sleep beside the wood-burning stove, don't you see? And even though I'm opposed in principle to the idea of... It makes a dog soft, all that luxury, and soft is okay for your town dogs and your poodles and your little yip-yip breeds, but cow dogs need to be tough. And sleeping inside the house beside a nice warm stove is... Well, it's pretty nice, to tell you the truth. And once in a while, a guy has to compromise his principles for... I did it mainly for Drover, see? He's something of a yip-yip, has a stub tail and short hair, and in cold weather, he whines and moans and shivers all night. And who can sleep with all that noise? And so, in a gesture of deepest concern for Drover's health and so forth, I agreed to sleep down at Slim's place, beside the wood-burning stove. But I let Mr. Moan and Groan know that we couldn't make a habit of it. Staying down at Slim's place is kind of fun, actually, when a guy gets over the notion that he's being corrupted by luxury. There's always a mouse or two to chase before bedtime, and sometimes, if it's a particularly cold night, old Slim lets us dogs sleep in the bed with him. The only problem there is that Slim snores in his sleep. And he's bad about stealing covers and throwing elbows. Oh, yes. And I once caught fleas in his bed. Anyways, we got up that morning around daylight, which came a little later than usual because the sky was so dark and cloudy. I heard Slim coming out of his bedroom and down the hall. He was his usual jolly self in the morning. Eyes half open, hair down on his face, little balls of lint in his beard, bouncing off the walls as he staggered down the dark hall in search of the coffee pot. He made it to the kitchen and found the stove. He found the box of matches. He lit a match, lit a burner on the stove, found the coffee, turned on the water faucet, and nothing came out. I raised my ears and rolled my eyes around and waited. There was a long, throbbing silence, followed by a deep sigh of deepest despair. Then, thanks, Lord. I guess I needed the water to be froze up this morning. I'm sure you wouldn't do that to a poor old cowboy without a good reason. Dadgum water. I knew I should have wrapped them pipes. I knew it would turn off cold one of these days and I'd get caught. And sure enough, I did. He wandered out into the room where we were. He sure looked lost and pitiful. I mean, here was a guy who was having to face the cold, cruel world without a cup of coffee. And even though I don't drink coffee myself, I know it's important to these cowboys. He yawned, raked the hair out of his eyes, and shuffled over to the stove. That's when he greeted me with his first words of the day. "Move, pooch, or I'll chunk up the stove with your carcass." Not good morning, Hank, or hi, doggy, or thanks for protecting the house last night, Hank. Oh, no, just move, pooch, or I'll chunk up the stove with your carcass. And I, being an intelligent dog and not wanting to be chunked or stoved, moved my carcass, and just barely in time to avoid being clunked on the head by the stove door when he opened it. He opened it and peeked inside. "Huh. Still got a few coals of Bodark left. Good." He reached into his wood box, brought out some bark, twigs, and kindling, and tossed them into the stove. He blew on the coals, and then... That was strange. He jerked his head back, jumped to his feet, and started... This was very strange. Started slapping himself on the face. Now, why would he... Okay, I've got it now. See, Slim used big chunks of Bodark in his stove at night. Bodark, being the very hardest wood on the ranch, made the best all-nighter logs for the stove because the hardest wood burns the longest. The only problem with Bodark is that it's bad to pop and make sparks, and that's not exactly what Slim was thinking about when he got down on his hands and knees and blew on the embers. They popped and threw a spark into his beard. And that's why he was slapping himself on the face. Putting out the spark, don't you see? Well, he got the kindling going and added a few small sticks of cottonwood and a few medium-sized chunks of hackberry. He closed up the stove, opened the draft in the damper, and wandered over to the window. That's when he saw the snow.
"Thanks, Lord. I sure needed some snow since my plumbing is froze up and I have to step out on the porch."
He scratched his beard for a moment.
"Guess I could put on my slippers, but I'd have to walk all the way back to the bedroom. Too much trouble."
He yawned, went to the door, and stepped out on the porch. He came back a whole lot faster than he went out, and he ran to the stove on crumpled toes and stood there, shivering and warming his hands. Then his eyes fell on me.
"You need to go out too, Mutt Fuzz. I don't want to be stepping on any surprises this morning."
Well, I really didn't care much for the idea of going out into the frozen cold and snow and so forth, and if it was okay...
"Out. Come on. You too, Stubtail."
And so it was that we were tossed out of house and hearth. It was bad enough just going out into the cold and snow. But on top of that, I had to listen to Drover's moaning and groaning. He took two steps off the porch and locked down in his tracks, and there he stood crying and whining. Not me. I made a quick tour of the surrounding area, checked out the grounds, sniffed a few trees, and... Yes, it was pretty cold and miserable out there, so I hurried back to the front of the house and stationed myself right in front of the picture window, where Slim couldn't miss seeing me. There, I went into a little routine called "We're Freezing Out Here," which consists of shivers, sad eyes, slow wags, and heavy begs. It's a crackerjack routine, and it should have worked. I mean, there I was, standing out in the frozen wastes of Antarctica, and there he was, pulling on his red long john underwear in front of a nice warm stove. I could see him in there, and he could see me out there. I know he did because he waved at me, and I saw his lips move and form the words,
"Hi, puppy."
And then he grinned. He thinks he's so funny. Hi, puppy. Who did he think he was? How would he have felt if... Oh, well. The heavy bags routine didn't work. We stayed out in the snow in the frozen tundra, shivering and so forth, until he had put on all his layers of clothes and came out of the house. He was wearing galoshes, a sheep-lined coat, and his wool cap with the ear flappers. He fired up the pickup,
and we were ready to drive up to headquarters and begin the day. And what a day it turned out to be. Well, at least he was kind and decent enough to let us ride in the cab with him, although it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd made us ride in the back. He has this strange theory, you see, that snow makes dogs wet and wet dogs stink. I've tested that theory myself, and I can report that it just doesn't hold water, so to speak. If you ask me, wet cowboys stink, but nobody ever asked my opinion. He let us ride up in the front, and we made our way through the snow and ice to headquarters. Along the way, we passed several bunches of cows. Their backs were covered with snow, and they were humped up and facing away from the north wind. And every time they breathed, which was fairly often, their breath made fog in the air. Yes, it was a cold, miserable day. And according to the weather report Slim picked up on the radio, the day promised to get even colder and miserabler. When he heard the report, he pressed his lips together and shook his head. "And I have to face all that without a cup of coffee." We pulled around in front of the machine shed and came to a stop beside the water well. Loper was there doing something with a cutting torch, and whatever he was doing didn't appear to be bringing him much happiness. He wore a frown. Slim watched him for a moment. "Plumbing froze up." Loper looked up from his work. "Yeah, you got any cute remarks about it?"
"No, only that if you'd take the time to wrap them pipes when it's warm, they wouldn't freeze up when it's cold."
"No kidding? Thanks."
He went back to heating the pipe with the torch.
"This happens every year, Loper. A good ranch manager would catch on after a while. You'll notice that my pipes don't freeze. That's because I take care of my business."
"What?"
I stared at Slim and thumped my tail on the seat. Unless I'd heard him wrong, he had just told a big whopper of a lie. His pipes had frozen up that very morning.
Slim's gaze shifted to me.
"Hush, what he don't know won't help him."
Back to Loper.
"You know, Loper, I was thawing out pipes with a torch one time and burned a hole in the pipe. Boy, that sure makes a mess."
Loper turned off the torch and came over to the window.
"Do you want to do it?"
"Not really."
"Good. I'll do it, and you can either watch or go do something constructive, but don't sit there in a warm pickup and give me advice."
"Well, you don't need to get snarly about it. I was just trying to help."
"Thanks. When I need your advice on plumbing, I'll give you a call. We've got phones, you know."
"I know how you operate, Loper. Slam, bang, and always in a rush. That's the wrong way to thaw out pipes."
Loper went back to the torch, shaking his head and talking to himself.
"No wonder you're still a bachelor. No woman could stand you in the morning."
"Well, you ain't such a sugar cake yourself, if you want to know the truth. And I've often wondered how Sally Mae has put up with you all these years."
Loper started the torch again and tuned up the flame.
"She's a very lucky woman, and she knows it."
"That's too much fire, Loper."
"Just hush, Slim. Control yourself for 2 minutes, and I'll have this thing thawed out. And then we'll find some little job for you to..."
By George, he struck water. Slim shook his head.
"I tried to tell you."
Loper shut off the torch and threw it down in the snow and came storming over to the window.
"Get me a hacksaw with a sharp blade, and don't say one more word. It was a sorry pipe to start with."
Slim got out.
"Sure it was. What are you going to fix it with, bubble gum?"
Loper was scrambling to shut off the main water valve.
"Get me one of those compression joints off the workbench. And if it's not too much trouble, why don't you hurry?"
It took them an hour to fix the pipe. They had to cut out the bad section with a hacksaw. The blade was not sharp. I could have predicted that. This ranch has never had a sharp hacksaw blade. I think they buy dull blades at a special store. Once they got the pipe cut out, the rest was fairly easy. They slipped the compression joint over both ends and tightened them down. They pressured up the lines, stopped all the leaks, and hollered down for Sally Mae to turn on a faucet. She did. It worked. The job was done, and Slim and Loper had managed to do it without any bloodshed. Sally Mae even brought out cups of coffee for the heroes, as she called them. I waited to see if Slim would admit that this was his first cup of the morning, and then explain why, but he didn't. Well, the boys put up their tools and stood at the door of the machine shed, sipping their coffee and watching the snow come down. Well, what do you reckon?
Radio says more this afternoon and tonight. It's liable to take us all day to feed and bust ice.
I think what we'd better do is split up. I'll take the flatbed and get Sally Mae to drive for me, and we'll feed hay up north. You take the old pickup down to the Hodges place and feed there. You probably better use the army truck, bad as those roads are liable to be.
Slim nodded. What if it won't start?
Well, why don't you take Alfred? He can pull you. He's done that before. And then he can drive while you string out the feed.
Okay with me, but his mama might not go for the idea of me taking him off in a snowstorm. And I've got a few questions about that myself. I'd hate to get stranded with him along.
He's not such a bad boy, Slim. You two would have a ball together.
I know he's a nice boy. That ain't the problem. I just hate being responsible for somebody else's child in a storm.
Loper gazed up at the clouds. Well, I think we're going to need all the help we can get today. I'll clear it with his mama. Oh, and you take the dogs.
Thanks a bunch. Two wet dogs and one urchin child ought to fix me right up.
Loper went back to the house to organize the troops. Slim finished his coffee and then pulled the flatbed pickup around to the haylot and started loading it up for Loper. The snow was coming down harder than ever. While I looked for mice under the bales, Drover stood out in the snow, shivering and moaning.
Oh, Hank, I'm so cold. I wish I could go back to bed.
Drover, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride.
I don't know what that means, but I'm freezing.
It means that if you could turn your fondest wish into a horse, you could, I don't know, give some beggar a ride into town, I guess.
Where would you go to find a beggar in this weather?
Well, you just... How should I know? Quit asking silly questions and catch some mice.
I don't even know what a beggar is, and I'm too cold to care.
A beggar, son, is one who begs.
One what?
One beggar. A beggar is one beggar who begs. That's simple enough.
Why are they all going to town?
Because they... I don't know. They need a horse, I guess.
I thought horses lived in the country.
They do live in the country, but... Never mind, Drover. Just never mind. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Oh, that's okay, but I'm still freezing.
After that, I stayed as far away from Drover as I could. Just being close to him made me feel goofy. Little Alfred arrived on the scene just then. He was all dressed up in a red snowsuit, red mittens, snow boots, and a wool stocking cap. Slim got the hay loaded just about the time Loper and Sally Mae and Baby Molly arrived. Alfred had been cleared by headquarters to go with us to the Hodges place, but Sally Mae still had quite a bit of advice to give Slim about being careful. Then we all said goodbye and went our separate ways. Loper and his bunch went north to feed hay, and Slim and our bunch loaded up in the old blue pickup and headed south. When we passed Miss Viola's house down the creek, Slim honked his horn and said,
"That's where my Petunia lives."
We didn't see his Petunia, but her two dogs, Black and Jack, came ripping out of the driveway and barked at us. Well, you know me. I don't take such things lightly. I sprang to the window and barked back at them. And if the window glass hadn't been rolled up, I probably would have thrashed them both right there in the middle of the county road. Nothing makes me madder than... Huh. Slim stopped the pickup and opened his door. And then he said to me, I think he was addressing me, he said,
"You really want a piece of those dogs?"
No, that was okay. There was no actual law against... Heck, as long as they just barked and didn't... No, we'd let it slide this time. In other words, no thanks.
Then hush.
He slammed his door and started off again. Fine, I could handle that. Hushing has never been a problem for me. Have I mentioned that Loper had taken a lease on the Hodges Ranch? Maybe not, but he had. And we were wintering a bunch of cows on it. It was a dandy place to winter cows because all the canyons and rough country gave them protection from storms. But it wasn't such a dandy place to reach in a two-wheel drive pickup in a snowstorm. Once you left the Blacktop Highway up on the flats, you faced 9 miles of long, lonesome road without a single house to mark the way or give you the feeling that you could get help if you needed it. And there were spots in that long, lonesome road where a guy could get himself stuck. Slim came pretty close on several occasions. The road was bad and getting worse. The road came to an end at the little camp house. When we got there, Slim shut off the pickup and took a deep breath.
Whoa, boy, I wasn't sure we were gonna get here. We shouldn't have tried to make it down here without a four-wheel drive. It's a good thing we've got the Camo Stealth Army truck down here. Let's see if she'll start.
We all piled out of the blue pickup and moved over to the Camo Stealth Army truck. What was a Camo Stealth Army truck? A 1953 Dodge 4x4 with big mud grip tires all the way around, and a 6-cylinder engine and a 4-speed transmission. It had a canvas top and was painted camouflage colors. That's where the camo part of the name came from. The stealth part came from... Let's see if I can remember what Slim told little Alfred. The old truck was so well camouflaged that it was invisible to enemy radar. That's what he said. And if you want to know who the enemy was and why they were using radar on the ranch, you'll have to ask Slim. Actually, I think it was some kind of joke. Anyways, we hiked over to the Camo Stealth, which was parked on the west side of the camp house. Slim climbed in under the wheel and called little Alfred over to watch.
Pay attention, Button. I may get hurt down here one of these days and need you to drive me to town. I want you to know how to start this old thing.
The boy climbed up on the running board.
Okay, Slim.
First thing you do when you drive any vehicle is check the gas gauge. Only the gas gauge don't work on this truck, so you run a shovel handle into the tank. Here, I'd better show you.
He got out and ran a shovel handle into the tank. He pulled it out and showed the boy the wet mark.
That means you got about 10 gallons of gas.
He got back inside and went through the whole starting routine. Put the gear shift into neutral. Pull out the ignition switch. Pull out the choke as far as it will go, but don't press on the gas pedal,
cause this thing will flood if you even say gas pedal.
What does flood mean?
It means the motor won't start because... I don't know why. Just do what I tell you and never mind the how come.
It was then that the cat appeared. Description: female calico, medium height and weight, long hair, pink nose, long white cat whiskers, and a pair of eyes that were something between greenish and yellowish. They called her Mary D. Cat. She crawled out from under the house and came running towards us, yowling. Now, most of your ranch cats will yowl once in a while, but not all the time. This one, once she started a yowl, she hung on to it and didn't quit. It wasn't a short and simple meow. It was more like,
meow.
while Drover and I were standing there beside the camo Stealth, listening to Slim's lecture. The cat came bounding over to us, and right away I noticed that she didn't have much respect for a dog. I mean, most of your ranch cats will approach a dog with some caution. They should. Not only is that the proper and mannerly thing to do, but it is a smart thing to do. See, some dogs don't need much of an excuse to thrash a cat. You might even say that they consider pounding cats part of their job. Or even a form of sport. A good, clean, wholesome sport that all the family can enjoy. And for that reason, your smart cats, or to put it another way, your cats who are less dumb than the dumber ones, will not come bounding up to a dog they've never met before, because that is a really stupid thing to do, and it can get a cat into deep trouble. But this one, here she came, bounding straight towards us and yowling,
"A crust of bread, bologna cheese, spare a morsel if you please. Marooned I am, oh hateful place. At last I found a friendly face."
Well, this was very strange. She came right up to me and began rubbing on my leg and yowling in my face. I guess you know how much I love being rubbed by cats. I don't. But there she was, all over me, just as though we were old friends, and we weren't. Not yet, and maybe never.
"A crust of bread, bologna cheese, spare a morsel, if you please."
I pushed her away. Kitty, I think there's been some... I don't have any cheese. No cheese, no bologna, no bread. And would you please stop rubbing on me?" She went right on.
"Marooned I am, oh hateful place. At last I've found a friendly face."
I backed up several steps to get away from... Fellers, this was a weird cat. I'd been rubbed on by cats before, but nothing like this. I backed up to get away from her, but there she was again, rubbing, purring, and yowling about cheese. "Kitty, I'm sorry you've been marooned, and I guess you think you've found a friendly face after all these years, but get back, will you? I think you've made a slight error. That is, I think you've mistaken my face for..." "Will you stop rubbing on me?"
"Cheese! Just one little piece of cheese. I dream of cheese, you know. And bologna, and Vienna sausage. And sir, you have such a friendly face, I just know you won't turn me away."
I was baffled. I mean, what can you do with a cat that's half starved, half crazy, and trying to love you to death? You can't just beat her up and go on about your business. I solved the problem by surrendering my spot. I ran around to the other side of the army truck and waited to see what Drover would do. When I left, Kitty didn't miss a beat. She moved right in on Drover and started the same routine about cheese and a friendly face. Drover wasted no time with niceties or small talk. He didn't know what was wrong with his cat, but he knew something was screwy, and he wasn't going to take any chances. You'd have thought he was facing a python or a boa constrictor or a ghost. Zoom! He vanished. Kitty had just lost another friendly face. Not one to be discouraged, she went straight to the camo Stealth and jumped up on Slim's lap. He was deep into his lesson on starting the truck. "Okay, you pull out the choker, let her sit for a minute, then..." He pitched the cat away. "Then you mash down on the starter." The cat was back in his lap. "With your foot like this here." He pitched the cat and pushed on the starter. It turned over with a growl. The cat jumped back on his lap. He pitched her again. The motor continued to turn. Then it fired once. The cat was back on his lap. Slim stopped what he was doing and looked down at her. She rubbed her ear across his chin and then flicked her tail over his nose. "Kitty, I know you love me, and I don't blame you because I'm so wonderful, but we're fixing to have a problem.
I can't start this truck with your tail in my face. Now scram.
He pitched her out, and 2 seconds later, she was right back.
Button, will you get this love-crazed cat out of here? 'Cause if you don't, I'll be forced to break her heart and possibly her neck.
Little Alfred took charge of the cat problem, and right away I could see that he had just the right approach. Holding her in a loving headlock, he began dragging her around through the snow. And it worked. The cat just went limp, didn't fight or scratch or struggle or make any kind of protest.
Well, with the cat under control, Slim turned back to the problem of starting the truck, which sounded as though it didn't want to start. He hit the starter again, and the motor turned over and over until at last it kicked off.
I had the misfortune of standing near the exhaust pipe when the motor kicked off, and it may be years before I get all that blue smoke out of my lungs. Boy, that was quite a... quite a cloud of smoke. And I decided to move my business around to the front.
Slim revved up the motor and adjusted the choke and told Alfred to get in, without the cat.
Then they pulled around to the cake house and started loading sacks of feed. I followed and heaved a sigh of relief. At last, we were rid of the... You'll never guess who went streaking past me and headed straight for the cake house. I'll give you a hint. She was calico-colored and weird. Yes, it was the cat. Perhaps you know where I stand on the issue of letting cats pass me on the way to the cake house. I don't allow it. It sets a bad example, don't you see, and can lead to trouble later on. Cats should always be last. So I reached for the afterburners and hit full throttle and went streaking through the snow.
And she beat me to the cake house.
Huh. That was a pretty fast cat.
But of course, we mustn't forget that there were other circumstances involved. Did I think to mention that I pulled a muscle in my right hind leg? Oh yes, bad muscle pull. I hadn't warmed up, see, and the cat had probably spent all morning warming up and preparing for that sprint to the cake house. So one interpretation of the facts is that she, well, cheated. Or if she hadn't actually cheated, she had certainly taken unfair advantage of the situation. Hey, I had a steady job. Many things to do besides warm up for a silly little race to the cake house, which, in the larger scheme of things, meant almost nothing anyway. I mean, who cared, really? Life is filled with challenges, and racing a rinky-dink cat ranks very far down the list. And did I mention about the cockleburrs? Yes. Not only was I slowed by a tragic injury to the greater boogaloo muscle in my right posterior thigh, which would have put most dogs out of the race right there, but once the race began, I found myself running over gobs and gobs of dangerous cockleburrs. You ever try to run a hard race on cockleburrs? It's virtually impossible. You talk about pain. No ordinary dog could have stayed in that race. I not only stayed in the race, but finished a respectable second, and might very well have won if it had gone another 20 feet. And if the cat hadn't cheated and used underhanded tricks to... But the important point is that the race meant nothing to me, and finishing second to a stupid cat sure didn't damage my self-esteemer. And just to prove how insignificant the whole thing was to me, I went over to the cat and gave her my congratulations for a race well run. Kitty, as a small token of my admiration for your athletic ability, I'm going to make sausage patties out of you.
A lot of cats will run when you offer them such a small token.
This one whirled around, humped up, hissed, stared at me with those strange yellowish eyes, and said,
"Listen, clown, you lay a paw on me and I'll take out your eyeballs and feed them to the crows."
Huh?
"And don't think I can't do it."
I took several steps backward. "Settle down, sister. Perhaps you..."
"I've been marooned on this ranch for 2 long years. I've survived coons, coyotes, bobcats, skunks, badgers, hawks, eagles, and rattlesnakes."
"Well, sure, and I admire that in a certain limited sense."
"You may think you're tough, potlicker. But you won't know what that word means until you lay a paw on me.
You know, I sense that we're barking up the wrong road here, and perhaps you misappropriated my meaning. All I meant to say was that, well, you run a pretty good race for a cat. She studied me with those unblinking cattish eyes.
What about the sausage business?
The sausage business? Oh, that! It meant nothing, almost nothing at all. Just a little attempt at humor. She heaved a sigh and relaxed the hump in her back.
It's been so long since I tasted sausage.
Right, exactly, and that was my whole point, you see. I was just saying, wouldn't it be nice to have a bite of sausage and cheese? The word had a dramatic effect on the stupid, on Miss Mary D. Cat. All at once, her pink little mouth curled up in a smile. She closed her eyes, began to purr, and started rubbing on my leg.
Cheese! Oh, what I'd give for a piece of cheese! I dream of cheese, you know, and a crust of bread, bologna cheese. Spare a morsel, if you please. Marooned I am, oh, hateful place. At last I've found a friendly face.
Very interesting. It appeared that I had stumbled onto a classic case of schizofrazzled personality. And in case you're not familiar with these heavy-duty technical terms, let me explain. Your typical schizofrazzled personality skips from one mood to another, don't you see? They'll be chirpy one minute, and the next minute they'll be yowling and hissing. And in your extreme cases, they'll even make boastful threats such as, I'll tear out your eyeballs and feed them to the crows. Another trait or characteristic of your schizofrazzled personality is that the skipping mechanism can be activated by certain code words. And you will notice that it took me only a matter of seconds to sniff out and discover Mary D. Cat's code word. Cheese. Pretty clever, huh? And now I can reveal for the first time that the so-called race to the cake house was just a ploy I had used to gather important information about this weird little cat. That's correct. I'd planned it from the start, and losing the race was just part of the overall strategy. Are you shocked? Surprised? Don't ever underestimate the cunning of a head of ranch security. And don't forget that we spend a good part of our time operating underground. And don't forget that staying at least one step ahead of the kittens is just part of my job. Okay. Where were we? Oh, yes, I had just outsmarted and outflanked Mary D. Cat and had gathered all the crucial information I needed. And now she was purring and rubbing on my legs and driving me nuts. And once again, I found myself thinking, get away from me. But rather than coming right out and saying that, which would have been tacky and unfriendly and, well, might have caused her to skip back over to the tear out your eyeballs scenario, I elected to, well, flee. Surrender my spot. Run around to the back of the cake house. And guess who or whom I found hiding back there? Mr. Shivers. He greeted me with his usual simple grin.
Oh, hi, Hank.
What are you doing back here?
Oh, watching the snowflakes fall, I guess. And shivering.
I see. Is there some reason why you can't shiver and watch the snowflakes around front with the rest of us?
Well, I guess I wanted to get away from that cat. I just don't know what to do or say when she starts rubbing on me.
She's just trying to be friendly, Drover.
Yeah, but she gives me the creeps. I never met a cat like her.
Yes, well, you must understand, Drover, that she's been living out here by herself for years, and she doesn't know how to respond to the sudden appearance of dogs who are, well, highly intelligent, dashing, daring, donder, blitzer, and handsome.
Yeah, that's me, all right.
I glared at the runt. Actually, I had myself in mind, but since you brought up the subject of the cat... I placed a paw on his shoulder and led him a few steps away. There, I glanced around to be sure we weren't being watched and conducted the rest of the conversation in a whisper. Since you brought up the subject of a cat, I wonder if you might do a little job for me.
What little job?
Actually, Drover, it's not so little. And in fact, it's a mission of great importance.
Gosh, and you'd let me do it?
That's correct. I've had my eye on you for a long time, Drover, with this particular mission in mind. And I'm proud to tell you that I think you're ready for it.
He puffed himself up and beamed with pride.
Gosh, I'm so happy and proud. I don't know what to say.
I understand, son, and saying nothing will be fine.
But if it's such an important mission, how come you trust it with me?
Because... I began pacing, as I often do when I'm reaching into the gaseous clouds of vapor and trying to find the right words to express a deep thought.
Because, Drover, it's time. It's time for you to take more responsibility. And it's time for me to allow you to take on more responsibility.
Suddenly, I stopped pacing and whirled around and,
by George, fell right over the edge of a little embankment. Hadn't noticed it there before. I climbed back out and gave him a steely gaze. Are you ready to handle more responsibility?
Oh, yeah, sure, you bet, unless... What's the job?
I paced back over to him and once again placed my paw upon his shoulder. It was a touching moment. Drover, we're building up our profile of this cat, and we need some additional information.
And?
And we've selected you to, well, conduct a little survey and ask the kitty a question. Here's the question. Kitty cat, what would you say if I told you that I'm going to make sausage patties out of you?
He twisted his head and stared at me.
Sausage patties?
That's correct. It's just routine market research, Drover. We want to know what she thinks of sausage patties.
Well, that sounds simple enough. Just ask her the question, huh?
Yes, and then come right back here and tell me her answer. I'll take it from there.
Gosh, I can handle that. Here I go.
Good luck, son. While Drover went skipping around to the front of the cake house, I moved to a chinaberry grove nearby and established an observation post. There I watched. Very interesting. Her answer to the question about sausage patties was a handful of claws to Drover's nose. Whack! And instead of reporting back to me, the little mutt went screaming all the way back to the house. Well, we had sustained a small blot on our record, but we had gained important information. Mary D. Cat wasn't one to waste words, and she had zero sense of humor. I mean, zilch. After entering all the info from the Drover incident into my database, I drifted back to the cake house and watched Slim finish loading sacks of cake into the camo stealth. And by the way, when I speak of cake, I'm not talking about birthday cake or wedding cake or any of the other kinds of cake made with icing. Cake, in the ranchy sense of the word, is cow feed. Cubes of feed, see? That are made out of compressed cottonseed. Ours was called 39% protein cottonseed cake, and it came in 50-pound burlap sacks. We started feeding cake to the cows after the first frost, the reason being that after frost, the grass begins to lose its food value and the cows need some extra groceries to make it through the winter. Pretty impressive that a dog would know all that, isn't it? On an ordinary day in the wintertime, Slim fed 2 pounds of cake per cow. But on this particular day, with the snow and everything, he decided to kick the grub up to 3 pounds. We had 250 cows on the Hodges place. If Slim was going to feed them 3 pounds per each, that meant, let's see here, we needed, how many sacks of feed? I'll have it worked out here in just a second, running a spreadsheet on. Our hardware runs a little slow in this cold. Okay, he loaded a bunch of sacks into the back of the camo stealth, and I really don't care how many.
If you want to know the exact number, do the figuring yourself. I'm a very busy dog. Where was I? Oh, yes, watching Slim load up an undisclosed number of sacks into the Sofort. Mary D. Cat was watching, too, but typical of her pattern of strange behavior, she wasn't content merely to watch. She had to get into the middle of things. She hopped up into the cake house, and Slim stumbled over no less than 3 times. He booted her out the door every time, but that didn't seem to faze or bother her at all. She went right inside and rubbed on his legs. Then she hopped up on a stack of cake sacks, and when Slim stopped to catch his breath, she jumped onto his neck and started rubbing his ear. Now that woke him up. I guess he thought a cobra had dropped down from the rafters. And when he felt that thing around his neck and heard that purring in his ear, he moved a little quicker than he was accustomed to moving. Ran into the door jamb is what he did and yelled. And when he saw that it was only the cat, he reached up and jerked her off his neck. You know what a cat does when you try to jerk her off your neck? She digs in with her claws. Old Slim got her peeled off his neck, but he paid a price for it. By then, Kitty had worn out her welcome, and Slim drew back and tossed her as far as he could, through the air and into the snow. I was standing nearby and watched her flight. Ears up, tail straight out, and all 4 landing gears down. She looked like an, I don't know what, a flying squirrel, a falling star, a hairy rocket-propelled something or other. But it was very exciting to watch, and have I mentioned that when cats make sudden movements like that, it gets me all stirred up? Yes, it's true, and it comes over me more or less on its own, without malice or forethought or much planning on my part. There seems to be some mechanism in a dog's mind that makes him rush to the scene of a crashed cat and start barking. And that's what I did, and pow! Sometimes that mechanism gets a dog into trouble before he knows it. I mean, I was just curious. Concerned. I hadn't actually intended to. That cat wasn't inclined to ask questions or take prisoners. At the first sign of trouble, she just loaded up and blasted away with her claws. Yes, we took a few hits and sustained some damage to, well, lips, gums, cheeks, eyebrows, and the soft, leathery portion of our nose. But that was a small price to pay for all the valuable intelligence information we gathered from the experience. Yes, our file on Mary D. Cat was growing larger and larger, and each new shred of evidence added to our profile of a sick and twisted mind. This latest incident certainly raised the possibility that this deranged cat didn't enjoy being barked at in close quarters. Now that's a sick mind. I mean, what possible harm? Ah, well. Now that we knew she would strike without warning, we fed this information into data control and got a new set of guidelines.
So don't bark in her face.
I never would have thought of that, but by George, it seemed pretty good advice. Just stop barking in her face. Sure, okay. Good old data control. Slim and Alfred climbed into the camo stealth, fired up the engine, and called for us dogs to load up in the back. I went flying into the back as gracefully as a deer and took the scout position on top of the spare tire. Drover came out as far as the yard fence and stopped. I guess he saw the cat and didn't want to risk getting another face full of her claws. Not a bad idea, actually. My nose was still throbbing. We had to pick him up at the front of the house. But the very second we pulled away from the cake house, here came Mary D. Cat.
Wait! Don't leave me! Take me away from here! Don't go! Cheese! I want some cheese! A friendly face!
And get this. She came bounding up to the truck, leaped up on the running board, clawed her way up to the door and side mirror, and ended up inside the cab on Slim's lap. He gave her the old heave-ho, and away we went. My ears flew up at this, which kicked in the voice of data control.
So don't bark in her face.
Well, she was on the ground and well out of range, so I overrode DC and barked with all my heart and soul. I love doing that. It's one of the pure joys of being a dog. It's where we discover the true meaning of dogness. We picked up Mr. Scared of a Wimpy Little Cat in front of the house and headed for the west pasture. Miss Kitty followed us for a ways, yowling.
Meow! Meow! Don't leave me! Take me away from here! Cheese! A friendly face!
I moved to the back of the truck and gave her my final words. It serves you right for being such a hateful little snot. Go catch a mouse. That's what you're here for. And always remember that Hank the cow dog does not take trash off the cats. Even Drover got in on the deal.
Yeah, and me too. And now I'll bet you're sorry for being so mean.
Well said, Drover.
And I hope you get fleas and ringworms.
Oh, good shot, son. Good shot. You really stuck her with that one. Grinning and barking and sticking out our tongues at her, we watched until she had disappeared in the distance. Well, Drover, we have notched up another victory over a cat.
Yeah, I guess so. But she sure slapped the fire out of me.
Don't worry about it, son. The important thing here is that once again, superior dog intelligence has triumphed over the forces of kittydom. He rubbed a bloody spot on his nose, and I... well, rubbed a bloody spot on my nose, caused, no doubt, by the dangerous cuckleburrs. Yes, of course. That had to be it.
I wonder what got her so worked up. All I did was ask her about sausage patties, and she didn't even answer.
I can't imagine, Drover.
She just hauled off and slugged me.
I'll swan.
I guess she doesn't like sausage.
Don't try to find intelligent reasons for the behavior of a cat, Drover. They're all nutty, and that one is even nuttier than most. Just forget about it. It's water under the dam. We turned our attention to more important matters, such as the feed run and the snowstorm, and making it up that long, steep hill west of the house. The road was slick and covered with snow, don't you see? And making it up that long, steep hill would have been no easy deal, even in dry weather. But that's why we had switched over to the camo stealth, right? Up front, Slim and little Alfred were having a good time. Slim threw the truck into four-wheel drive and first gear, and we hit the hill with a good head of steam. And let me tell you, fellers, the old camo stealth just ate that hill. The engine roared and threw mud up with all four wheels, and above it all, I could hear little Alfred making truck sounds of his own. I was up in the scout position again, checking out the country ahead and letting the wind blow my ears around. Say, this was fun! What more could a ranch dog ask of life? This was true cow dog happiness. It was then that I caught sight of two brown shadows that darted across the road in front of us. Could they be? Yes. They were coyotes, perhaps two brothers I had known in bygone days. They stopped in some bushes on the left side of the road, and as we roared past them, I got a good look at their faces. And yes, it was Rip and Snort. Well, I was feeling rather expansive and full of myself, you might say, and I being motorized and they being afoot. And perhaps I said a few things that would have been better left unsaid. You know how it is when you pass some guys walking. Sometimes you just can't resist the temptation to mouth off. And I did. Mouth off, that is, not resist temptation. Hey, you guys need a ride? Ha ha! Call a taxi. Too bad you don't have a camo stealth army truck to ride around in. I stuck my tongue out at him. There, take that. And furthermore, your mama wears gunny sack underpants. Yes, perhaps it was a little childish, but it was also fun. And there's more to this life than work and worry. A guy has to have a little fun now and then, even if he's head of ranch security. There was only one little problem with this interlude of fun. At that very moment, Slim made a hard left turn and something very bad happened. Here's what happened. I had moved my business from the spare tire to a position near the back of the truck bed in order to make my communication with the Coyote Brothers somewhat easier, don't you see? And I sure wasn't expecting Slim to jerk the truck hard to the left. But he did. And suddenly, I found myself hung out to dry, you might say. The truck went left, and I went right. Right over the side and into a snowbank, which wasn't too funny, since I had just been mouthing off to... Yikes! Slim was speeding up, shifting gears, driving away. Hey, wait a minute, what about me? Drover, don't just sit there, do something! He was running in circles in the back of the truck.
Oh my gosh, Hank fell out! Stop murder! Oh, my leg!
I chased him for 100 yards or so and gave up. Slim never looked back, never saw a thing. He must have been yakking to little Alfred. Or singing. He often sings when he's feeding cattle. Well, the situation wasn't really as serious as I had first thought. Yes, it was a little scary to get dumped out in the middle of that wild canyon country, but Slim still had 2 more pastures to feed before he headed back to Wolf Creek. When he got out to feed the cows in the Pickett Canyon pasture, he would notice the huge silence and vacancy created by my absence. No doubt he would gasp and recoil in horror and say something like, "Holy smokes, I've lost my dog, and that dog's worth hundreds and thousands of dollars. No, he's priceless. You can't put a price on a dog like Hank." True, very true. And then he would say, "I can't believe I was so careless with the head of ranch security. I should have let him ride up front, but I didn't. And I could kick myself for taking chances with a dog that's worth more than gold or silver." Exactly, or diamonds or rubies, for that matter. "Well, I'll just have to backtrack until I find him. We can't go home until we find our Hank." Right, because if he did, little Alfred would be heartbroken. Loper would be furious. Sally Mae would be... Well, we needn't speculate on that, but I was pretty sure that she would be upset. It would all work out. I would just hike back to the house and wait for the crew to come looking for me. Then we could all have a joyous reunion and laugh about it. Although I would have to give Slim a few hurtful looks so as not to let him completely off the hook. It was pretty careless of him to throw me out of the truck, as he himself had admitted. I trotted up the hill, thinking that when I reached the crest, I would look down into the valley and see the camo stealth streaking back to find me. I reached the top of the hill and stopped for a breather. I looked off to the west and saw... lots of snow. Oh, well, it would take him a while to discover the tragedy. A guy just had to give him a little time. I walked across the cattle guard and started down the hill and noticed... dog tracks in the snow? That was interesting. Had I walked down this hill earlier in the day? No. Had Drover? No. Then apparently we had some stray dogs on the place, and you know where I stand on the issue of stray dogs. I don't... Coyote tracks? Suddenly, I remembered my passing remarks to the Coyote Brothers. Something about their mother wearing... what was it? Gunny sack undergarments? I suddenly became aware of the fact that I was walking down the middle of the road, exposed for all the world to see. Very shortly after this thought occurred to me, I found myself creeping through the taller forms of vegetation in the vicinity, such as the clumps of little blue-stem grass, Indian grass, skunk brush, mountain mahogany, and wild plum thickets.
No, I certainly didn't need another encounter with those guys. I'd learned just about all I needed to know about cannibal life. And there they were, 50 yards ahead of me, and I almost had a heart attack. I stopped in my tracks and sank down to my belly and watched them through the little blue stem, which, by the way, was a reddish-brown color, not blue or even close to blue, so why did they call it blue stem? Not that I cared, you understand, because I had bigger problems on my hands. I watched them through the grass. They trotted across the road some 50 yards ahead of me. I could hear them laughing and belching, which is fairly typical behavior for happy cannibals. Lucky for me, the wind was coming straight out of the north, so it carried my scent away from them. Otherwise, I might have been a cooked goose, because those guys have noses like you won't believe. They crossed the road just about where we had seen them earlier and disappeared up a short, deep canyon to the north. I waited for a long time just to be sure they'd gone. Then I switched over to ultra-crypto creeping mode and moved out on silent pause. I hadn't gone more than 100 yards when, holy smokes, a branch snapped and I whirled around to face. Okay, the wind had caused a branch to creak in a hackberry tree to my right, and that was no big deal, but I had enjoyed about all that creeping I could stand, and I went to full throttle on all engines and zoomed the rest of the way back to the camp house. It would have been very nice, very satisfying, if I'd found the truck there waiting for me. That would have closed out the day on a happy note. But the truck was not there. Instead of being greeted by Slim and all my old friends, I was greeted by this long-haired yowling thing that came bounding out of the yard.
A crust of bread, bologna cheese, spare a morsel if you please. Marooned I am, oh hateful place. At last I found a friendly face.
Would you care to guess what she did immediately? She started rubbing on me, of course, and babbling.
Did you happen to bring some cheese? Just a little bite would be fine. I crave cheese, I dream of cheese. And maybe you could take me away from here. I've been marooned these 2 long years.
I backed away from her. No, I don't have any cheese. And no, I can't take you away from here. She followed me and continued to rub and purr.
You'll stay a while, won't you? We have so much to talk about.
I'd love to sit and talk, Kitty, but I'm afraid I won't be here that long. My ride will be arriving any minute now, and we'll have to say hors d'oeuvre until another day. I backed up another 3 steps. She followed.
Where there's an hors d'oeuvre, there's a piece of cheese.
No. I'm afraid you've missed the translation. Hors d'oeuvre is French for goodbye. I speak many languages, you see, which includes French, Italian, Thousand Island, and Ranch, so I have many ways of saying goodbye.
Don't say goodbye. You just got here and we haven't talked.
Yes, and I can't tell you how much I regret that because I don't regret it. I trotted away from her again. We haven't talked and we never will talk. In the first place, you're a cat, and I make it a habit not to talk with cats. Here she came again. I kept moving. Talking with cats is not only a waste of time, but it's also a violation of the cowdog code. We're not allowed to mingle with cats on the job, or off the job, or anywhere else. Nothing personal, but you're a cat. In the second place, my ride will be here any minute now. I stopped and scanned the horizon in all directions. Nothing. Not a sound, except the soft tinkle of snowflakes. My business associates will be picking me up soon, and she had caught up with me. I crawled under a barbed wire fence and trotted out into the horse pasture. And in the third place, I hate to put it this way, Kitty, but you're absolutely driving me nuts with all that rubbing and purring.
But I haven't seen a friendly face in so long.
Yes, and it's made you a lunatic. That's what you are, a lunatic cat. And nobody could stand to be around you for more than a minute. All at once, her whole manner changed. Her eyes widened. Her jaw began to tremble. Tears slid down her cheeks.
You called me a lunatic cat!
Yes, ma'am, I did.
You don't care about me.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. In my deepest heart of hearts, I think you are totally weird. She burst out crying.
Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat some worms.
And with that, she went flying back into the yard, crawled into the house through a hole in the foundation, and disappeared. In the silence, I could hear her sobbing under the house. Well, it served her right. I returned to the front of the house and began pacing around near the point where three pasture trails merged with the main road out of the ranch. Slim would be coming down one of those roads, and I wanted to be there when he came through. I was pretty sure that he would stop anyway and honk his horn and call for me because, well, by then he would have missed me and would be frantic with concern. But I didn't want to take any chances on getting left. So I paced around in the middle of the road, waiting, watching, listening. In the course of listening, what I heard was Mary D. Cat crying under the house. It didn't bother me at all. Even though we heads of ranch security have a warm side to our nature, and we are famous for being kind to children. I mean, that's just bred into us. To become a head of ranch security, a guy must take a solemn cowdog oath to protect and defend and be nice to all children, even the ones who are bratty. But we also have this other side, which is cold and hard and made of quarter-inch steel armored plate. It allows us to conduct slashing interrogations and solve murder cases without the slightest quiver of emotion. We're talking about your basic hard-boiled ranch dog here, and listening to sad stories is just part of the job. It was this cold, hard side of my nature that greeted the sobs of Mary D. Cat. Yes, I heard them, but they bounced off my steel-plated eardrums like, I don't know what, but they bounced off. I continued to pace in the snow. Don't get me wrong, making ladies cry had never been high on my list of fun things to do, even lady cats. Maybe some dogs get a kick out of it, but I don't. I do it when I have to. It just goes with the job. Every once in a while, you make a lady cry. It can't be helped, and I wished she would stop crying. Hey, I told the truth, is all. If she couldn't handle the truth, that was her problem. I had problems of my own. What was keeping Slim so long? I cocked my ear and listened. Crying, weeping, sobbing. The only thing more annoying than a cat that rubs is one that crawls under a house and cries. I have absolutely no use for... I changed the direction of my pacing ever so slightly and eased over to a point in front of the house. Kitty, you can't help it that you're weird. You do the best you can with what you have, which isn't much. More blubbering. Look, everyone in this world has to be something, and you happen to be a little crazy. It's no big deal. More blubbering. I slipped under the fence and stood in front of the hole in the foundation. I wish you wouldn't do that. I mean, you can't just fall apart when somebody tells you the truth. I gave you my honest opinion. What more can I say? No change. Look, will you say something? I'll be leaving soon and... I stuck my head into the hole. I couldn't see her in the darkness, but I could hear her loud and clear. Look, my car and driver will be here any minute now. I'm a very busy dog, and I don't have time to waste on crybabies and ball bags. At last, she spoke. Through tears, of course.
I'm not a crybaby or a ball bag. I'm just a poor, lonely cat who's been marooned for 2 long years. And I want a bite of cheese and a friend. Nobody cares.
Yes, that's sort of the bottom line, isn't it? Well, I'm going to be leaving here in a minute, so let's try to wrap this deal up. I'll be coming back to feed the cows another day. You work on your problems and get all the tears out of your system, and maybe we can sit down and talk about it. What do you say to that? She said, more tears. Look, cat, do you want to resolve this thing or not? I don't have all day. My ride, well... Just then, I heard the hum of a motor. Well, there's my ride. I have to go. Have a great day. She bawled louder at that. Well, what do you want me to say? Have an awful day? Okay, have an awful day. Adios, goodbye, hors d'oeuvre. Too bad for her. I had done my best. I wiggled my way out of the hole. I had gotten myself a little farther into the house than I'd planned. I wiggled my way out of the hole, put Miss Mary D. Cat and her problems behind me, and saw the camo stealth army truck go down the road and disappear behind a curtain of snow? Hey, wait a minute! Why didn't he stop or blow his horn? How was I supposed to... I'd been waiting out there in the middle of the road! I went dashing away from the house and down the road. I barked. I yelled. I went to turbo lightning speed and chased the truck half a mile until my turbo lightning turned to turbo mush. Exhausted, I stopped. And there, standing in the middle of the road, in the silence, with snowflakes falling on my nose, I had to face the awful truth. Slim hadn't even noticed that I was missing. He had left me, and I was now marooned and abandoned, a dog without a home or a country. And for some reason, I found myself thinking about cheese. Cheese? That was ridiculous, totally absurd. I didn't even like cheese. It was too hard to chew and it gummed up my teeth. Hence, it followed from simple logic that I would not allow myself to think about it. Hey, I not only didn't like cheese, but I knew that craving cheese was one of the first symptoms of... It was worse than fleas or ringworm. And I didn't want it. And I would not allow myself to become a victim of cheeserosis. No way. That was all right for weirdo crybaby cats, but not for dogs. Furthermore, just because I was now marooned and abandoned didn't mean that I was going to rush back to the house and establish diplomatic relations with Mary D. Cat. No thanks. In the first place, there was a very high probability that Slim would discover his error and come streaking back to the canyon country to rescue me. Hence, my period of exile would probably not last long. A couple of hours at the most. Nothing to be alarmed about. In fact, at that very moment, I turned and looked down the road and didn't see him coming. But then again, I really hadn't expected him back so soon anyway, so no big deal there. In the second place, I had always considered myself a very self-sufficient dog, the kind of dog who enjoyed his own company and could always find ways of passing the time. Now, your ordinary dogs, your poodles and your house dogs, your little yip-yips, they couldn't spend a minute alone without going into a panic. Why? Because they are such boring little mutts that to spend time alone with them is to die a slow, boring death. Not me, fellers. When I'm alone, I'm in the company of the most interesting and resourceful dog I know, so the thought of being marooned with me for an hour or two, or half a day, or a whole day, or even several days, or a week. Okay, maybe it wouldn't be all that great, but I knew that I could handle it. Self-discipline, that's the secret. and I had gobs of self-discipline. And I sure as thunder didn't crave the company of a sniveling piece of cheese. The company of a cat, I should say. A sniveling cat. And I didn't go streaking back to the house. I walked back to the house. And did I go straight to the hole in the foundation and tell my sad story to Mary D. Cat? No, sir. I did not. I established a temporary camp in the middle of the road and didn't even get close to the cheese. Close to the house, I should say. Didn't even get close to the house. No, I dug myself a little bed in the snow right in the middle of the road where Slim could find me when he came roaring back. He would be so embarrassed and angry with himself and apologetic. Imagine him leaving his head of ranch security at the Hodges place. He would beg for understanding and forgiveness. I would grant it, but not right away. These wounds take time to heal, and I wanted him to learn his lesson from it. I curled up in the snow and watched the snowflakes fall and kept my eyes locked on the point where the road disappeared into the soft curtain of cheese. Of snow, I should say. The point is that I was self-sufficient and perfectly content to spend a couple of hours by myself, thinking deep thoughts and laughing at my own wit. And the hours dragged by, and I thought I would go nuts. Where were they? Why hadn't they come streaking back to save me from this horrible silence and isolation? Hey, darkness was falling across the canyon, and the coyotes were howling, and there I was, marooned and exiled and abandoned, and I wanted some cheese. And suddenly it occurred to me that Mary D. Cat needed a friend. Someone to listen to her sad tale of woe. A soldier to cry on. And what the heck, I had a few minutes to burn, so I hiked over to the house and looked her up. I wandered over to the hole in the foundation and glanced over both shoulders to make sure that no one was watching. No one was, of course. I knew that. But still, this was embarrassing. I pointed my nose towards the hole. Miss Mary D? Hello? Are you still there? I've experienced a slight change in plans. Maybe you should come out so we can talk about it. I can hear her sniffling under there, but for a long time she didn't answer. Then I heard her voice.
No, I won't come out. You said I was weird.
Perhaps you have me confused with someone else, ma'am. I'm almost sure I wouldn't have said such a thing. And if you'll just come out, we can...
You said it! I heard you! You said I was a weird cat, and nobody cared about me!
No, I think what we have here is a simple case of mistaken identity. You're probably thinking of my companion, my friend, Drover. Small, sawed-off, stub-tailed little mutt. I often get blamed for his careless remarks, don't you see?
It was you, and I'm not coming out.
I took a deep breath and glanced around. It was getting dark. Okay, maybe it was me. I admit it. Did you hear that?
Keep going.
Well, there isn't much more to say, really. I admit that I was misquoted, and I accept full and total responsibility for everything that happened. Although, I still say you shouldn't have taken it so hard.
Are you sorry for making me cry?
Am I sorry for... Okay, let's get it over with. I made a few careless remarks, and I'm sorry they hurt your feelings and made you cry, although... I must add,
You'd better stop talking while you're ahead, doggy.
I glared at the dark hole from whence her voice came. Yes, ma'am, I guess you're right. Now, will you please come out? She came out and looked at me with a pair of sad, red-rimmed eyes.
What are you doing here? I thought you were leaving.
Yes, exactly. I, too, thought I was leaving, but instead of leaving, I got left. Her eyes brightened on that.
Oh, how exciting! You mean we're marooned together?
That seems to be the case, and let's get right to the... You don't happen to have some cheese, do you? All at once, I have this powerful craving for cheese, and I don't even like this stuff. She began purring and rubbing on my leg.
I know. It must have something to do with being marooned. With me, it started the first day, and I've been hungry for cheese for 2 years. Weird, isn't it?
Yes, it's weird, and it's not like me at all. And let's go straight to the bottom line, ma'am. Circumstances have placed us on the same team, so to speak.
Oh, you want my help, is that what you're saying?
I'm not one who needs help very often or who enjoys asking for it, but yes, I seem to be... I seem to find myself... This was very painful. We appear to have reached the point where I need your help, yes.
Otherwise, you might not survive the night.
That thought had occurred to me, yes. And a guy doesn't need to worry about the second night until he's survived the first one, is sort of how it looks from here.
Yes, the coyotes are bad in these canyons. And the bobcats are even worse. Do you want my advice?
No, actually, I thought... I swallowed hard. Yes, I want your advice. After all, you're the one who stayed alive down here for 2 years.
That's right.
She kept on rubbing on my leg.
I'd advise you to spend the night under the house. It's the only safe place on the ranch.
I moved several steps away from her. Yes, right. I had already reached that same conclusion myself.
There's only one problem, doggy.
You can call me Hank, and what's the problem?
You don't like cats.
I don't like... Whatever gave you that idea? I mean, okay, it's sort of natural for cats and dogs to be on opposite sides, but I think that we have room for compromise here, given the unusual circumstances and so forth.
You don't think you'd mind staying under the house with a cat?
I feel that we can work around that, yes, no problem.
But there's still another problem. I rub on things, and you don't like that.
She came over and rubbed me on the front legs, rubbed my left side, my tail section, and then my right side. I sat there as still as a statue, fighting against all my natural impulses to make fangs and growl. Fellers, this was one of the toughest assignments of my whole career. All my years of security work rose up inside my head and called for me to snarl and snap at that cat. But I sat there and took it. I had no choice. Actually, ma'am, I'm discovering a whole new appreciation for the, rubbing process. There's something soothing about it, and I wanted to bite her tail in half so badly. The rubbing business might be a small problem, especially at first, but the alternatives are not all that great. In other words, I think we can work that one out, too.
Well, I'd hate for you to be unhappy.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm very, happy. Very. And if she didn't quit rubbing on me and flicking that tail across my nose, I was gonna... Just then, I heard coyotes howling in the distance. No, sir, that rubbing will be no problem whatever. You just rub all you want and, by George, we'll... Do you suppose we ought to finish this conversation under the house?
Yes, I guess we should. I'd rather stay outside and enjoy the fresh air, but it starts getting dangerous at this time of the night.
I headed for the hole in the foundation. Right, so why don't we just head for the fort?
Sometimes the coyotes come right up to the opening and bark at me. They like to eat cats, you know.
Yes, and guard dogs, too. I've had a little experience with those guys, and it makes sleeping under the house sound pretty good to me. I waited for her to go into the house. Ladies first, you know. And I followed, wiggling my way through the narrow space between the ground and the floor of the house. It wasn't so easy for me to get around in such tight quarters. I mean, with my huge thighs and massive shoulders and everything. But I had pretty strong incentive to make it work. We crawled all the way to the northwest corner, as far away from the opening as we could get. It was very dark in there, and also dusty. But I was learning to like it. I couldn't believe Slim had left me down there. What a lousy way to treat the head of ranch security. I mean, if I could just make it through one night with the cat, surely he'd be back to get me the next day. Although, oops, he was feeding the Hodges place every other day, not every day, which meant... And what if nobody missed me at all? That was hard for me to believe, but stranger things had happened in the world. Well, there we were, and Madam Kitty was having the time of her life, rubbing and purring, purring and rubbing and dragging her tail across my face. After all those months and years of being alone, she had something warm to rub on. And before she got done with me, I would probably be as bald as a Thanksgiving turkey. I hated it. Every second seemed like a minute, and every minute seemed like an hour. Would this go on all night? Didn't she ever sleep? Well, maybe she didn't sleep at night, but I certainly did. Sleeping happened to be one of the things I did particularly well, and it didn't take me long to
drift off and start pushing up a long line of Z's.
As you might expect, I dreamed of the lovely, incomparable Miss Beulah the Collie. Who would want to dream of anyone else? I had gone visiting at her place, and we were sitting together in the shade of that big native elm north of the house. Plato, the spotted dumb bunny bird dog, was nowhere in sight, which pleased me very much. In real life, he was always around, like flies and gnats. But this was my dream, and in my dreams, we have no bird dogs. Who needs them? And why Miss Beulah continued to waste her time hanging around that... Oh, well. I am still the master of my dreams, and in my dreams, we have zero bird dogs. There we were, Miss Beulah and I, sitting in the... I've already said that. I cocked my head to a rakish angle and said in my smoothest voice, "Well, my prairie wine cup, here we are, alone at last. A penny for your thoughts." She gave me that secret smile that sent little shockwaves all the way out to the end of my tail. And then she leaned towards me so that I caught the scent of her aroma and said,
"Cheese. Would you like some cheese?"
Well, I... Yes, those weren't exactly the thoughts I had expected to buy for a penny, but
Yes, I would love some cheese. And then, you won't believe this, then she rolled in a huge wheel of cheese. I mean, that thing must have been 5 feet across. And we started
gobbling cheese in huge bites. And I found myself talking with my mouth full. Well, Beulah, let's talk about love, shall we?
Yes, let's. I love cheese.
Yeah, and so do I. And you know what, Beulah? I used to think only of you. But now, I think only of cheese. Love's crazy, isn't it, my dear?
Yes. And love is blonde, the same color as cheese. Oh, Hank, this is so romantic. Talking to each other with our mouths stuffed with cheese.
Yes, my love. And blowing cheese crumbs in each other's face. This is the way I'd always hoped it would be.
Well, it was a beautiful dream. But just then, guess who walked up and ruined it all? You'll never guess. You probably guessed Plato the bird dog, right? No, absolutely wrong. Well, not absolutely wrong. It was partly wrong and partly right. And let me explain. In the dream, Beulah and I were there alone, sitting under the tree, and we've covered that two or three times, when out of nowhere, who should appear but Mr. Birdwatcher himself? Well, I wasn't about to let Plato ruin another precious encounter with my one and only true love in the whole world, cheese. I know this sounds odd, but dreams are that way sometimes. Anyways, he came blundering into the middle of this precious romantic encounter, and as you might expect, he wanted some of our cheese. I told him to buzz off, but instead of buzzing off, he went to the giant wheel of cheese, opened his jaws, and was about to snap off a big bite. Only he didn't get the chance because I, clubbed him over the head with my enormous paw. That would teach him a valuable lesson about... That was odd. I seemed to be picking up the smell of skunk. It was very faint at first, but it didn't stay faint for long. In fact, it became so strong that I almost fainted. And holy smokes, that's when the dream rolled away. I found myself back in the real world, under the house at the Hodges place. And I was staring straight into the hateful little eyes of a skunk. Yes, indeed. In my dream, I had thought he was Plato and I'd bopped him on the nose. And that had been exactly the wrong thing to do. Have we discussed skunks? They often take up residence under ranch houses, don't you see? And Mary D. Cat had neglected to tell me that she was sharing the place with a loaded stink bomb. And the last thing you want to do to a loaded skunk under the house is to heckle him or get him stirred up with provocatory gestures. Suddenly my eyes were burning and my lungs were burning. All the circuits on the smellatory panel hit overload. And sirens began going off in my head. I couldn't breathe. I could hardly see. My instrumentation was blown. Smoke and fire and flames filled the control room. And my whole life had come down to two words. Fresh air! I staggered and stumbled through the darkness, ran into water pipes and conked my head on floor joists and cinder block piers, fought my way through the green poisonous air until at last... I reached the escape hatch and tumbled out into the sweet, cold air of night. Gasping for breath, I looked around and saw Mary D. standing a few feet away. She was licking her paw.
I should have known that you and Leroy wouldn't get along.
Leroy? You mean he has a name?
Oh, sure. We share the place. He stays on his side and I stay on mine. He's okay with cats, but you must have said something that really hurt his feelings. I mean, he's never done this before.
I didn't say anything. I was having this dream, see? And I thought, never mind, it's too complicated. The bottom line is that I punched him. She stared at me and shook her head.
You should never punch Leroy.
I realized that.
I wish you hadn't done that.
I pushed myself up on all fours. Well, I kind of regret it myself, and I'm sorry you didn't tell me that I was moving into a den of skunks.
Leroy's the only one, and he's really a nice guy.
I noticed.
You just can't punch him around.
Hey, it was an accident. And could we change the subject? Such as, what do we do now?
She cranked up her purring machine and started rubbing on me again.
Well, I'm afraid we've lost the house. This has never happened to me before, and...
Suddenly, her eyes turned into flaming circles of fire. She humped her back and started hissing like a... I don't know what.
A cobra, I guess. A hissing, angry cobra that had gone insane. And she drew back her right paw and aimed a handful of sharp claws at my nose.
Lucky for me, I saw it coming and used my lightning-fast reflexes to dodge the punch. Otherwise, our friendship might have ended right there. And she might have... Anyway, she humped up and hissed and threw a wild punch. And then she started screeching at me.
You bozo! I offered to help you and took you in to save your stupid skin and look what you've done!
It was an accident.
You can say you found the only skunk within 5 miles of here and punched him out.
I was dreaming.
Dreaming? Is that all you can say? You ruined our friendship with Leroy.
I thought he was a bird dog.
Bird dog? Is that all you can say?
What do you want me to say?
I want you to say.
Suddenly, her screech changed into a moan, and she burst out crying again.
I want you to take me away from here. My home is wrecked. It's all I had to show for my 2 long, lonely years. I have no place to hide. The coyotes will eat me. Oh, Homer, take me away from here.
My name is Hank, actually.
Her head came up, and once again, her eyes were aflame.
Do I care what your name is? You've ruined my life, you clam brain! And now you better get me out of here!
Don't screech at me.
I'll screech at you! I'll tear out your eyeballs!
Okay, screech all you want.
She went back to tears.
Is that all you can say? I just lost my home, and now you ask me to screech about it? What kind of heartless brute are you?
Oh, boy. I walked a few steps away and waited for her to get control of herself. At last she did. She came up behind me.
Homer, our situation is serious. We'll be sitting ducks for the predators if we stay here.
I agree. If you can get us out of these canyons, I can find the way back to my ranch.
I know a trail out of the canyon. It will take us up on top, but it will be dangerous.
I looked down at her.
Well, it appears to me that anything we do around here will be dangerous. Trying to carry on a normal conversation with you is dangerous. Every 5 minutes, you're wanting to tear out my eyeballs.
I've been down here too long. It's made me weird.
When I told you that, you threw a fit.
cats are that way.
I told you that, too, and you threw another fit. And my name's not Homer. It's Hank.
Well, my name's not Kitty. It's Mary D. Cat.
I like Kitty better.
I like Homer better.
Well, this is all very interesting, but I guess we'd better get out of here. Which way is out?
Follow me.
She headed north, through the corrals and beyond, into the deep, forbidding darkness of Pickett Canyon. That place was pretty scary, even in the light of day. But at night, although I had some hesitations and reservations about following a cat anywhere, I did lower my standards to the point of allowing Mary D. Cat to lead our group out of the canyon, and stayed pretty close to her, as a matter of fact. We'd gone about half a mile when we topped a little hill near the place where the trail splits and the left fork goes over to Scott Springs. The main trail, if you remember, goes on up the canyon to Moonshine Springs. Or maybe you don't remember, if you've never been there. And maybe you haven't been there, but it does. Anyways, the cat stopped on that little hill and looked back to the south. She heaved a deep sigh and shook her head.
I just can't do it.
You can't do what?
Leave.
I stared at her in utter, complete disbelief. What do you mean you can't leave? That's all you've been talking about since the first minute I met you. Take me away from here. Get me away from this ranch.
Once again, she was... I couldn't believe this. Just couldn't believe it. She was crying again.
I know, but it's still my home. How can I leave the place that's been my home for 2 years?
Easy. You just keep walking.
But I can't walk away from all the memories. The sun coming up over the cap rock. The wildflowers in the springtime. The mesas sinking into deep purple shadows at sunset.
I just about had enough. I stuck my nose in her face and growled. Look, cat, you're my ticket out of here. Never mind the memories. Start walking or we're going to have us a little riot.
She humped up and hissed, and her eyes took on that same crazy look I'd seen so many times before.
Listen, bozo! Don't you tell me what to do or I'll tear out your eyeballs!
I don't know what might have happened if the coyotes hadn't appeared just then, but they did. And we never had a chance to find out. Did they devour both of us right there in one big cannibal feast? You'll just have to listen and find out.
Okay, I had gone nose to nose with the cat when all at once I saw a pair of big yellow eyes looking at me. And they weren't Mary D. Cat's eyes. That gave me my first clue that they belonged to someone else. And I couldn't think of anyone else I wanted to meet in that canyon on a dark night. Then a second pair of eyes appeared. That gave me my second clue that they belonged to someone else. Mary D. had only one pair of eyes, don't you see? Kitty, I'm afraid we've been found by the coyotes. You're the survival expert around here. What do we do now? I couldn't believe what she said.
Well, it's all over. We're finished.
What do you mean we're finished? What about all your survival tricks? What about tearing out their eyeballs?
She gave me a sad smile.
That was just a bluff. It works on dogs, but not on coyotes. Nothing works on coyotes. I'm a dead cat, Harvey, and nothing can save me.
Yeah, but what about...
It's no use. I always knew they'd get me, and they did. But you can make a run for it. They won't follow you.
Me make a... That wouldn't be a very noble thing to do.
No, but who needs to be noble at a time like this?
That's a point. And you're just a cat. The world is full of cats.
That's right. Only one me, but plenty of cats.
I began easing off to the north. Well, Mary Dee, it was a real pleasure meeting you. I have mixed feelings about running out on you like this, but I think I can live with my feelings. She waved a paw.
Go north until you come to Moonshine Springs. Just west of the spring, you'll find a trail out of the canyon. I'll stall them as long as I can. Goodbye, Harvey. When you get back to civilization, eat a piece of cheese for Mary D. Cat.
I sure will, and thanks for...
Go! Hurry!
Since the coyotes were almost upon us, that seemed good advice. I turned and made a lightning dash up the canyon. Free at last! Boy, that had been a close call. Why, if the cat hadn't... I couldn't believe she'd done that. It was almost enough to force me to rethink my position on cats. I mean, I'd always thought of cats as selfish and... I found myself slowing to a walk. It just wasn't right. Me walking away from danger and leaving a poor, helpless cat to be mauled by cannibals. I mean, I'd had some success in dealing with coyotes before, and maybe I could... You won't believe this, but I found myself reversing directions and heading back down the canyon. I couldn't believe it either. I mean, she was only a cat, and the world was full of cats, and who cared... When I arrived back at the scene, the Coyote Brothers were standing over Mary Dee. They were licking their chops. They seemed fairly surprised at my sudden appearance.
Evening, guys. How's it going? Hey, you found my cat. Thanks a million. I'd love to stay and talk, but we're kind of in a hurry, don't you see? And
the brothers glanced at each other and started laughing.
Ha, 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 honk big stupid for blundering to coyote camp.
Stupid? Hey, I didn't blunder in here. I came to pick up my cat. They got a bigger laugh out of that.
Ha, 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 a plenty stupid cause coyote not give up cat. And not give up honk too, cause coyote same guy who made foolish talk from back of truck about coyote mama.
That? Hey, that was nothing. Just a little joke, guys. Honest.
Ha! Little joke on Hunk. How's Hunk now stay for big coyote feast, oh boy?
I had sort of expected this. I mean, I hadn't really expected them to let us walk away without an argument. And it just so happened that I had prepared a clever plan. It was a very clever plan, and I knew it would work because I had tried it several times before and it had never failed. The plan rested on my knowledge of the coyote mind. I knew how they thought, see, and I knew their weak spots. Watch this. I waited for him to stop laughing at their good fortune. Then,
you know, Snort, I happen to be familiar with your culture and tradition, and I know that before a major feast, you guys love to fight and gamble and sing.
Snort shook his head.
Eat first, then sing and grumble and fight and sing.
Now you've got it backwards. The singing and gambling come first because after a big meal, you like to take a nap. They whispered back and forth. Then Snort said,
maybe so. Coyote like big nap.
Right. And as I recall, you guys think you're pretty hot rod singers.
Not thinking. No, for sure. Coyote berry hop rod singer. Berriest hop rod singers in whole world.
I gave them a careless chuckle. Yeah, well, that's what I'm leading up to. It's been a while since we went up against each other in a major singing contest, and it happens that I've got a new song that will just blow your drawers off.
coyote not wear drawers?
Well, you know what I mean. My song is so good, I'm sure it would beat any song you guys could come up with. That is, if you can come up with a song.
Ha! Coyote got plenty song. Coyote Barry better singest in whole world.
An idle boast, Snort. Unless you're willing to try it out in a contest that's fair and square. The brothers shook their heads.
Coyote not give a hoot for fair and square. Coyote like to cheat.
I know, Snort, but this contest must be fair and square. For you see, if I win the battle of the songs, you must let me and my cat go free.
Sound pretty crazy.
Right, but you guys are pretty crazy too.
Huh. Coyote pretty crazy, all right.
See, we agree on everything. And just to make sure that the contest is fair and square, I'm going to be the judge because, well, everyone knows that I'm fair and square and impartial. Honest. No kidding. I really am. The brothers held a conference and talked it over. Then Snort said,
Coyote not care who judge contest, cause Coyote win for sure.
Well, we'll see about that, Snort. I can promise only that I'll be totally fair and square. And you go first. They shook their heads.
Hunk go first. Coyote go fifth.
You mean second, don't you? He clubbed me over the head.
Mean go fifth.
Okay, fine. That'll work. Well, here goes. You're gonna love this one. It raises a deep philosophical point, Snort. And ask the question, how could a mother skunk love her children?
Coyote not give hoot for deep frizzological point. Sing song, then shut up.
Okay, fine. Here goes. And with that, I sang my new dynamite song, which, by the way, I composed on the spot. It had been more or less inspired by my encounter with Leroy the skunk.
I've noticed in the course of years of traveling through this vale of tears, there's several things I've never understood. How tall's the sky, how deep's the sea, and how come God invented me, and how do skunks cope with motherhood? Now a skunk's no friend of mine, I'll say. I'll walk around one any day. If he takes the high road, I'll take the low. I think that everyone agrees that a skunk smells bad in the first degree. So how do they fall in love, do you suppose? Just think about it, contemplate. Who'd ask a skunk out for a date? A date with a skunk couldn't be much fun. A guy would have to be pretty drunk to spend an evening with a skunk, and who could stand the smell to marry one? Imagine the bride in her wedding clothes, wearing a clothespin on her nose, while the groom holds his breath just to survive. And the children came, heaven forbid, could a mother skunk really love those kids? That wouldn't make me glad to be alive. Now what a shock to a young girl's mind, first to fall in love and then to find herself in charge with a brood of little skunks. Now a man would go into a coma, hit the roof or call his mama, Ma, get over here and help me pack my trunks. But a woman's love, they say, is blind. She'll give it to most any kind of ugly thing she finds in the nursery. If a mother skunk can love those young'uns smelling like a bunch of onions, then a mother's love can't smell, much less see. So the next time you old moms out there are tired of worry, work and care, and wondering if this motherhood really pays, just remember it could be worse, riding to church in the back of a hearse, or being a mama skunk on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to you. Be glad you're not a skunk.
Well, I put my whole heart and soul into that song, and when I'd finished, I faced Rip and Snort and waited for a roar of applause. They stared at me. No applause. Well, is that all I get for doing the best song of the year?
Not best song of year, only boring and stupid. Coyote not give hoot for mother skunk.
But you'll have to admit that the melody was kind of nice. They shook their heads.
Not have to admit. Coyote song much better and betterest.
Yeah, but you haven't even sung it yet, and it's illegal and crooked to make judgments before you've done the song. Who knows, you guys might not remember your words. And don't forget who's the official judge of this contest. I didn't like the way they laughed at that last statement. It made me wonder if they were going to keep their respective words about making this an honest contest. Mary Dee must have been having the same thoughts because she looked up at me and whispered,
I don't think this is going to work, Harvey.
Of course it is. And will you stop calling me Harvey? She didn't have time to answer. Just then, Rip and Snort began warming up their tonsils and preparing for their big production. And they told me to sit down and shut up, which I considered a fairly reasonable request, considering who they were and all. So I sat down and shut my trap and listened to their latest assault on good taste and music. It had a lot of rhythm and noise and no melody whatever. A pretty good kind of song for cannibals, in other words, because I can't carry a tune anyway. Here's how it went.
Rumble, 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 matter. Rumble, 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 matter, matter. Rumble, 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 matter. Rumble, 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 matter, matter.
Rip and Snort are toughest guys, singing song, telling lies. Howl at moon, play all night. Love to eat, love to fight. Sleep all day, not give a hoot. Coyote, just a big galoot. Better not get in our way, or we will punch your lights out. Huh. It's the cannibal way. It's the cannibal way. It's the cannibal animal, foof and fannibal cannibal way.
We see you in the dark. You know you can't hide. We got eyes in the front and eyes on the side. See, we see you. We hear you. We're coming on through. The world's most famous wrecking crew. We smell pretty bad and we know we are cool, cause we learned our stuff at cannibal school. Bobcats, badgers, guard dog mutts. We clean their clocks and kick their shins. It's the cannibal way. It's the cannibal way. It's the cannibal animal, foof and fannibal, the cannibal way.
Rumble, 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 matter. Rumble, 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 matter, matter. Rumble, 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 matter. Rumble, 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 matter, matter.
It's a cannibal way!
The brothers finished their little whatever it was. You can call it a song if you wish. I'd call it a noisy, tasteless piece of low-class coyote trash. Every bit as bad as the others I'd heard them do over the years. They turned to me with big sloppy grins on their faces.
Huh,
Now what, Hunk, say?
Well, it, leaves me breathless.
What that means, dressless?
It means, well, I guess you're wanting to hear the final opinion of our impartial panel of judges, and here it is. I paused for a moment, just for dramatic effect, and pretended to be giving the matter deep and serious thought, although I had more or less already picked the winner. Okay, guys, we've got a winner. Stand by. Our big winner in tonight's contest is Hank the Cow Dog doing Ode to Mother Skunk. No applause. Only blank stares. But you guys win the consolation prize, which is a one-week all-expenses-paid vacation in the next canyon. Congratulations and start moving, kitty. These guys have been known to riot after a big defeat. We began edging northward. And boys, it was fun. We really enjoyed it. And what really matters is not who wins or loses, but... In a flash, they had changed positions and were blocking our path. Snort was grinning.
Ha! What really matter is cheat and win, then have big coyote feast.
Yes, Snort, but that would be, cheating. And I know that you wouldn't want history to record that you were a couple of cheaters, so to speak.
Ha! Coyote not give hoot for so to speaking. Only give hoot for big yummy supper. Start with cat, then eat hunk too. Oh boy!
Miss Kitty and I traded looks. She said,
I didn't think it would work.
Quiet, I'm not through yet. It's going to get a little crazy from here on, so be prepared to play to my lead and be ready to run. I turned back to Snort. Okay, fine. Now we know the truth about you guys. You cheat and can't be trusted. And I guess that's our tough luck.
Ha! Very tough!
But before you proceed with a shameless travesty of justice, there's something you should know about this cat.
Coyote eat cat in two bites. Not give hoot for shameful tapestry.
Yeah? Well, you'd better hear me out, and then you can make up your own minds. I mean, you guys are old enough to start making your own decisions about... Well, life and setting a good example for the youth of our...
Hunk, get to point!
Right, and here's the point. I left Mary D's side and walked over to the brothers and whispered, Boys, two nights ago, that cat was bitten on the neck by a vampire. It was a long moment of silence as the brothers stared at me with big, empty eyes.
What means bitten by umpire?
Not an umpire, Snort. A vampire. Do you know about vampires? He shook his head.
Coyote not play baseball. Not give hoot for fun and games.
Yeah, well, vampires aren't fun and games. I leaned forward and spoke in my spookiest voice. Vampires are terrible, scary creatures. They rise up out of the graveyard in the deep dark of the night. And they go moaning and crying through the night, looking for victims. You know what they do? They bite their victims on the neck and inject them with the deadly vampire virus. And then they tear out the victim's throbbing gizzard and eat it raw. I studied my audience. They were all ears and eyes. They were buying the story, I could tell. And then, Snort, after doing all that, they turned their victim into... A little squeaking mouse. Oh, and one last thing about vampires. They hate cheaters.
Coyote not crazy for meeting umpire.
Yeah, well, you're fixing to meet one right now. Watch this. I turned to Mary D and gave her the secret sign. A slightly raised eyebrow. Then I closed my eyes and said the next part in the spookiest voice I could come up with. Seven slithering, slimy lizards, spider webs, and haunted houses. Arise, O vampire, seek their gizzards, and turn them into squeaking mouses. You might remember that Mary D had shown signs of weirdness earlier in the day.
In other words, she knew a thing or two about strange behavior, and she didn't get it out of a book. She knew about it firsthand. And once she had figured out what I was doing, she played her part like a real pro. She rose slowly from the ground, kind of like a balloon being inflated. And as she rose, her eyes grew wider and wider. And remember that she had those greenish yellow cat eyes, the very spookiest kind when you see them in the dark. Her eyes grew wider and wider, and you know how cat eyes are sometimes black in the center? That's the way they were, two glowing circles of greenish yellow light with darkness at the centers. She floated up to a standing position, and then the middle of her back kept going up, making the kind of hump that cats make when they're mad or crazy. She opened her mouth, showing them her spiky little teeth, and cut loose with an eerie yowl. Now, sometimes when a cat goes through all that routine, it will cause a dog to become inflamed and want to start barking. But Mary D was playing her part so well, and it was kind of a dark, spooky night anyways, and I had softened up the brothers with my vampire story. All of that together took its toll on the morale of the cannibal army. Their ears shot straight up, and their eyes grew as wide as saucers, and I noticed that a strip of hair was beginning to rise on both their backs. And fellers, they were watching every move she made and giving her their full attention. In other words, they were not showing signs of inflammation, which was very good because if they had, we would have been finished. It appeared that we had a chance of pulling it off. Well, Mary D went on with the drama. After rising slowly to her feet and humping her back and yowling, she locked her gaze on them and took a step towards them and hissed. It was a very convincing hiss, and it caused the brothers to inch backwards. And then she moaned.
The moon is full, the earth is turning, my vampire appetite is burning. Two coyote gizzards I must eat to make this dreadful night complete!
Say, that did get their full attention, especially the part about coyote gizzards. Rip looked at Snort, and Snort looked at Rip, and then they turned to me.
Coyote not so hungry now. Maybe Hunk better call off umpire and keep away from Rip and Snort.
Sure, good idea. I just want you guys to know, you're right, Snort, I'd better try to get her under control before it's too late. I spoke to Kitty. Get back, vampire! Get back! Away, away, be gone! She turned and hissed at me, and by George, it sent a few shivers down my backbone, even though I was part of the show. Hey, guys, I'm afraid it's too late. Once she starts these vampire fits, she's out of control. All I can tell you is that if she comes after you with those deadly poison vampire fangs, you'd better run for your lives. Right on cue, she sprang in their direction. Oh no, there she goes. She's out of control. The vampire's taken over. Run for your lives, boys, and protect your gizzards. There was a mad scramble, and then silence. Total silence. Mary D stood alone in the moonlight. We had pulled it off. Nice work, Kitty.
Her head came around very slowly and... She stared at me with those strange eyes and... My goodness. Then she hissed.
I am a vampire. And I want your gizzard.
Huh? The old ears shot straight up and the old eyes popped open. I felt the hair rise on the back of my neck as I, went to full reverse on all engines and more or less dug four trenches in the snow. Then,
She smiled.
Just kidding. I'll have to remember this vampire routine. It works like a charm.
I managed to get everything shut down before I tore down any trees or caused any major damage to the surrounding ecosystems. I studied her very carefully. Are you kidding or not?
Of course I'm kidding. How could I turn into a vampire?
Well, a guy never knows about you cats, and don't forget whose idea it was, and stop using my ideas against me. It's not funny.
Sorry, I just couldn't resist.
Okay, let's get out of here before they decide to come back. Lead the way. She went scampering up the canyon, across a snowy meadow, over rocks and through bushes, and then into a forest of huge cedar trees. I soon lost my sense of direction, and I could only hope that this crazy cat knew where she was going. At last we came to the place she had called Moonshine Springs, where clear, sweet water came out from under a big rock. We paused there to catch our breaths and get a drink. Then she pointed to a washed-out trail going up the side of the canyon wall.
That's the only way out.
Boy, that's a steep, rascal. I hope... Suddenly, I was cut off in mid-sentence by the raspy hacksaw voice of... Yikes, was it Rippin' Snort?
Hey, y'all can't leave! We ain't had a bite to eat in 3 whole days. We're starved plumb out, and Junior, talk to him, son, and explain just how hungry we are.
I seem to remember hearing that voice before. It belonged to a certain buzzard named Wallace, who happened to have a son named Junior. Yes, it was all fitting together. I swept the surrounding trees with my most penetrating radar gaze, and sure enough, there they were, perched on a limb of a big cottonwood tree, 2 slouching, hungry buzzards. Junior grinned and waved his wing at me.
Hi, doggy. We got lost in the night.
Yes, we did. Got lost and blowed off course in the snowstorm, and here we are in this canyon. Tell them how hungry we are, son.
We're a little lost and pretty hungry.
Very hungry, Junior. We were pretty hungry 2 days ago and ain't had a scrap to eat since then.
Wallace stared down at me.
We're very hungry is what Junior's trying to say, and I don't suppose y'all had happened to have, a couple of pounds of bologna or some old chicken necks you don't need or dead rabbit, would you?
No, we're on our way back to the home ranch, and we've got no eats. Sorry.
No, you ain't. You don't give a care. You're just saying that.
Okay. We don't have any eats, and I don't give a care.
See there, Junior? I knew he didn't care, and that's the kind of friends you have, selfish and heartless and...
His eyes focused on Mary D. Cat, who had begun rubbing on my leg.
Say, neighbor, what do we have there?
This, I said, moving away from the rubbing machine, is a cat, and she will rub on anything. A sparkle came to his eyes.
A cat! A darling little kitty cat! You know, if that cat's getting on your nerves, maybe we could talk trade!
Oh, no, don't start that. The kitty is his friend, most likely.
Hush, son, I'm working on a deal here.
Wallace turned back to me.
Anyways, dog, me and Junior was just a-wondering about the maybe so of making a little swap for that cat of yours.
Junior rolled his eyes.
Oh, don't embarrass me again.
The old man ignored him.
That's a mighty nice-looking cat, neighbor, and me and Junior would sure try to trade with you.
Oh, you wouldn't like this cat, Wallace. Every once in a while, she turns into a vampire. There was a moment of silence.
A vampire? You mean one of them things that bites necks and drinks blood?
Right. And this one just loves gizzards. There was another moment of silence.
Gizzards? Now just hold your horses, Pooch. That's kind of backwards to what we had in mind.
I gave Mary Dee the raised eyebrow. She shifted into her floating and moaning routine and cast a hungry look up into the tree.
The moon is full, the earth is turning. My vampire appetite is burning. Two buzzard gizzards I must eat to make this dreadful night complete.
Wallace bought the whole show. Hook, line, and sawhorse.
Son, I think that pretty much answers all the questions I had about vampires, and I reckon we'd better spread your wings, son. We're fixing to catch a plane out of here.
I thought we were going to spend the night here, Pa.
Son, a guy can always find another cottonwood tree, but his gizzard is very close to his heart. And no, we ain't staying the night here with all these vampires running around. Let's go!
But Wallace, I thought you wanted to work a trade.
No, sir, I did not. That was all Junior's idea. I ain't hungry, couldn't hold another bite, and while a buzzard will eat most anything that moves, we draw the line at vampires, and son, I'm quitting this place. See you upstairs.
With that, he spread his wings, pushed off the limb, and went flapping into the night sky. Junior grinned and shook his head.
I think you got him on that one, doggy.
Yeah, well, I owed him one. See you around, Junior. I'm sorry we didn't have a chance to sing.
Maybe next time. Bye, doggy.
He crouched down on the limb, gave a jump, flapped his big buzzard wings as hard as he could, took the top out of a cedar tree, and vanished into the darkness. I chuckled to myself and noticed that Mary Dee was watching me with a little smile on her mouth.
You've really enjoyed this vampire business, haven't you?
A guy has to take his fun where he can, Kitty. And yes, life's liable to seem pretty dull if I ever get around normal dogs and cats and people again.
Oh, so you're going to blame it all on me?
I whopped her on the back. Why not? That's what cats are for. Now let's see if we can find our way back to the ranch. We made our way out of the deep, spooky darkness of Pickett Canyon, which was no small deal, let me tell you. We had to climb almost straight up over rocks and snow, mountains, glaciers, and so forth, but at last we made it over the rim. Once on the flats, we stopped to catch our breaths. A gentle breeze was blowing out of the southwest, an indication that the storm had passed. The clouds had rolled away, leaving a black velvet sky speckled with diamonds of light. Holy smokes, just look at those stars! If a guy spent enough time looking at those things, it would almost make him feel humble about his place in the world.
Almost?
Yeah, well, in my line of work, a guy can't use too much of that stuff. There's not much demand for humble dogs in the... You seem to be rubbing on me again. Have we discussed my feelings about being rubbed on by cats? She was rubbing on my front legs and flipping that tail across my nose.
I know what you think, Harvey, but I want to rub you goodbye.
Goodbye? What do you mean, goodbye? I thought...
Oh, I know. I made such a scene about being marooned and wanting to leave, but now that I'm free to leave... My goodness, it seems that the freedom to leave was more important than the leaving.
The freedom was more... Huh.
Yes, and now that I'm free to leave, I'm also free to stay, and I think I will. After all, who'd want to go back to civilization and become a normal cat?
She smiled a crazy smile and stared at me with those big cattish eyes.
Being weird is really fun.
Well, you ought to be having a ball, sister, because you win the prize for weirdness. And you made a very convincing vampire.
Wasn't that fun? I may try it out on Leroy. Oh, won't he be surprised?
She chuckled and dived back into rubbing on my legs. I stared at her and shook my head. You know, I never thought I'd be teamed up with a cat. It kind of wrecks my whole theory of life. I mean, if there's one good cat in the world, everything's up for grabs. She turned her face up to me and batted her eyelids.
Maybe everything is up for grabs. Or maybe I'm not such a good cat. Tomorrow, I might want to tear out your eyeballs.
Yeah, and that could get you turned into Kitty Hamburger. But tonight, right now, this minute, you're okay, Kitty. Just don't tell anybody I said so. It could ruin my reputation. She rubbed on me one last time.
Goodbye, Harvey.
Goodbye, Gertrude.
My name's Mary Dee.
My name's Hank.
You're nice for a dog.
You're nice for a vampire. And with that, I set my course by the North Star, waved a last goodbye, and began the long trip back to the ranch. Case closed. And don't you dare tell anybody that I made friends with a cat.